B-Pod Studios.
There's someone very special I want you guys to meet.
Tucker and Rich.
I just want to tell you both good luck.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich in the Town Fair Tire Studios. You can watch us on Twitch. Just go to twitch.tv and search the Sports Hub. And Ted Johnson has been good enough to be filling in for, I guess.
Anytime you need me, man.
Listen,
give me a call.
You are in the A1 seat.
With you guys,
you're the first person we call. Let's go to Manny real quick on line three. Manny, you're on with Ted Johnson.
Hey, you know, guys, the ratings are up. The money's flowing. Give Ted the helmet cracker Johnson what he wants. Put him on as a fourth guy. You know, the midday show technically has a fourth guy with Jim Louth always talking behind the glass. Put him on Ted Johnson full time in the morning.
I appreciate that, bud. Thank you, man. I'm having fun.
Look at this. We've got the Ted Johnson.
I love it.
The Ted heads.
Very nice.
The Ted heads are calling.
Very nice. Fans are great.
They're rallying for you. Just at Mike Thomas. That's all you got to do.
I will say, though, that I've been on the air for the last 2.5-3 months, and I've appreciated every opportunity I've been given. Everybody I've worked with, I have really, really enjoyed here. I had reservations about doing sports talk in Boston, being in Houston. It's just a different animal up here. It really is. And so you better know what the hell you're talking about. You better have strong takes. You better not, you know, you better be able to, you know, formulate your opinions in a way that, you know, people can hear it.
You better be all the things that our show isn't.
No, that's true. That's true.
I'm just going to say, where are you going with this?
Walt didn't even know you could challenge a cat.
Oh, my God.
No, but I've always thought Boston Sports Talk as is the benchmark. I've always, in all these shows here, for years I'd come visit my kids and I'd listen to the Sports Hub, and I just thought every show and every personality on these shows is as good as it gets. So there was a little bit of like, all right, I better be ready for this. And so I've had a lot of fun, and the opportunity's been great. So I just want to get that off my
chest. What is the deal with – because, I mean, to be quite honest, you know, before we started doing – Fred and I were on the station. You know, I hated sports talk. I hated it. It was the worst. It was like it was a world where people would bitch about teams that had just won the World Series and that they should have done it in less games, or they should have run up the score, or blah, blah, blah. Or they would complain about running up the score and things like that. It was just a pit of misery, and I hated it. And I'm wondering if – you know, it was kind of the one advantage, I guess, that Fred and I had is that we didn't have to do that. And because we hated it, we kind of were able to do our one thing our own way. Because to be quite honest, at the beginning, we had a bunch of people who were sending tapes in saying, well, you got a real sports time show.
Yeah, yeah.
You had like these guys who had been writing for, you know, the Waltham Herald for like 40 years saying, yeah, I know a little bit about the old pigskin. And so we kind of had that advantage. But you listen to other sports talk stations, what is it like in like a place like Houston and you know, outside of it? Because to be quite honest, I really don't know, except for when we're on Media Row.
Here's the thing. It's
do they wear ties to work?
No. Okay. Nothing like that. It's just, look, the ratings are for the show I was on. Unfortunately, we had good ratings, but compared to the ratings that you guys have up here, it's like it's a pimple on the ass. Like, it's just, I think somebody told me that there's 1 in 3 men between the age of 25 and 54 listen to sports talk in Boston. And so the cum numbers are ginormous. There's a lot of people. It's a very powerful medium. Down in Houston, it's not as much of a there's 5 sports talk stations in Houston. Are you kidding me? 5. And the ratings they pull are like, some of them don't even pull ones. It's a joke. So it's diluted.
Okay.
It's diluted. Yeah. And here's the thing. And people really care about one sport down there. One.
Is it football?
It's the Texans. That's it.
See, I was thinking
it's
maybe
not college football.
I was thinking college.
It's
okay.
Texans. You know, the Astros, look, they won the World Series 2 years ago. That will get people a little bit excited, but people don't necessarily like to hear baseball talk. They just want the NFL, Texans, 24/7, and that gets, that gets old kind of,
I just know that when we were on Radio Row, there was a fight between two stations.
Oh boy, yeah.
And I remember they were arguing over the ratings.
You know, that he's not there anymore. He got fired.
Yeah, I know. And so, but there was a fight on Radio Row, and when I found out they were fighting over whether one of them got like a one share or a one and a half share, I was like, holy moly.
Yeah. You were like,
you're weird.
You're like, I got it pretty good, don't I?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we're obviously very lucky because around here, all the teams are, you know, seem to be winning. So that definitely helps us out. But I mean, it's a strange world. There's some Ted heads calling in. Just real quick. Let's go to line three. Three, what's up? Yeah, Paul, you're on Touch and Rich with Ted Johnson. Paul.
Oh, Paul. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you say Paul.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so Ted, I lived in Houston back in the, from like 85 to 95. Met my wife there. I live up here now. Big Patriots fan and all. But I think you're great. And I love all the Houston talk because all they cared about back then was the Oilers.
That's it.
Now it's the Texans.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You ever eat at his dad's barbecue joint? Did you ever go down to, what was it called? The Rib Tickler?
Rib Tickler and Tombo, yeah.
Did you ever go there, Paul?
No, I have not been to the Rib Tickler.
Okay, well, I need to know.
A lot of places.
Thank you, Paul. So the Rib Tickler, you said your dad once brought barbecue for the entire Patriots team when you were on it.
He did.
Now, you said Wilfork effed it up, right?
I said that. He didn't confirm it yet, but that smile tells you all you need to know that I nailed it. Wilfork crushed it. Yes or no?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you to say anything else about Vince Wilfork.
Wilfork did commercials for grills after he retired.
I understand the history.
That's a good point.
I'm never going to make you say another word.
That's right. That's right. But we can't bring it up.
What's the irony that Vince now lives in Houston?
Yeah, I know. Maybe that's why you left.
I was just going to say, I find it strange you're not there now. You're here. All right.
I was on your side, by the way. You can check the tapes.
We were on your side on that. You don't need to defend me on that.
All right.
That was my biggest professional gaffe of all time.
It wasn't a gaffe. It was a lapse. Everyone's got it. Everyone brain farts on the air. It happens like that. But however, Vince Wilfork, one thing I will say about the guy is every play person we've had on who has played with him before has said that guy puts down so much food. And one of my favorite videos of all time is the one where he's got the rib cooker and he might have how many racks of ribs in there? It might have been like six racks of ribs that he's working. Now, obviously, it's for a cookout. It's probably not all for him. But that man was in his happy place. Like, he was just dancing and having himself a good time.
We had Merriweather on here, and he talked about being invited to Vince's for a cookout and how Vince is in his happy place when he's standing next to his grill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I grew up in a barbecue family. We had a rotisserie pit that it would run all through the night. You know, we had when we first opened in 1984, just three meats, ribs, sliced beef, and links. And that was it. And then now our menu's expanded from 1984 to it's huge now. But,
what did you used to crush back in the day?
But like, my favorite meal was what we call the meat stuffed potato. It's a baked potato with our chopped beef in it. And it's basically our sliced beef grounded with marinated in our sauce. We have our sauce, we're known for two things for the Rib Tickler. We're known for the ribs and for the sauce. And so it's marinated in our sauce. I put that chopped beef on my meat potato and then all the fixings that come with it.
I want that now.
But I'm talking about like when you were at your most eatingest. Yeah. I don't know how should I say it. When you ate the most in your life, what would a meal be for you? Like when you sat down and just said, dude, I'm eating.
Yeah.
What would your average meal be?
Oh, I would eat more throughout the day, but when I was taking in, you know, a lot of calories, you know, 8,000 calories a day. I could back in the day. Yeah.
We're talking like high school, college type thing?
More in college, you know, going into the pros.
Just to put things in perspective, a guy your size, how much like do you put in a day right now? How many calories do you take?
Probably 3,000.
Okay, well that seems like a number that somebody your size should have. So you would do 8,000 calories.
I feel that's probably a little bit high, but I ate a lot. Yeah, I ate a lot, but I was burning a lot of energy.
Do you have like one glorious meal that you remember just being your one shining moment?
You know, there's a meal that I ate that preceded the night that was I had the night before what I would say was the best game I've ever had.
Okay,
and so I always tried to go to that restaurant and eat that same meal. Yeah, anytime I was on the road. And there's a restaurant called Houston's.
Oh, dude, I used to love you. There was a Houston's here.
It used to be Houston's here.
Houston's was the best.
What do they have on the menu that they call their What do they call it?
For me, it was the spinach dip. That was the best thing they had.
But they had the baby back ribs.
Oh yeah, the ribs were awesome.
Okay, and so I had these baby back ribs the night before I played the Dallas Cowboys, 1996, and I had my best game ever. And so I swear by eating ribs the night before a football game from that moment on. And if I could ever find ribs, I was going to eat ribs, man.
All right. We have Mike Gorman coming up, but I do want to get back because athletes are the most ridiculous. When it comes to superstitions, we had DeBrusk on.
Sure.
He was talking about going in a slump and driving the wrong way. I want you to tell me that there were some maniacs that you used to play with who had superstitions that were just unbelievably insane.
I have to think about it.
Okay.
Okay. Right. I do have one.
All right. Hold on to it. All right. 617-779-0985. We'll talk to Mike Gorman about the Celtics right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
World champion Red Sox are back.
Back. Back. Back.
And so is your favorite daily baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mazzarotti.
Holy smokes.
Tonight at 6.
It's mumbo jumbo.
It's your baseball fix.
Gobbledygook.
From the play on the field to the front office moves. So what's happening around the league?
There's the potential there for big stuff.
The Baseball Reporters with Maz.
Don't blow it.
Weeknights at 6 on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Listening at home to Toucher and Rich is simple with your Amazon or Google Smart Speaker.
Oh, I need one of those.
Just say, play 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Five on the shot clock. Turned over. Horford right up the middle finds Haywood, goes hard to the basket. It's two.
Good job on the defensive end by the Celtics.
985 Sports, if it's Toucher and Rich. Hey, we got a win last night. How about that? Celtics, even if it's against the Cavaliers, man, when you're in a 4-game losing streak, you'll take whatever you can get. And of course, doing the play-by-play and so much more. The man bringing the personality, the guy who is keeps Scalabrine in line on these road games, Mr. Mike Gorman. Thanks for coming on again with us this morning. Good, sir. Good morning, sir.
How are you guys?
Hey, good. By the way, Mike Gorman is...
You know, I've been listening here. I think we have an order off, a breakfast order off between Scal and Ted.
Really? So how much does Scal put down?
He usually starts with 5 eggs.
Hey, that's a good idea, Mike. That's some of my biggest meals, Rich, and you guys, is my breakfast meal. I mean, I'll have probably 5, 6, 7, 8 egg whites with oatmeal, with yogurt, before I even go to the gym. So
all you
good
have is,
idea, Mike.
So yeah, that's very similar. It would be fun to watch you two guys.
Yeah.
It'd be more fun to watch the waitress try to figure it out.
So eggs, yogurt, and oatmeal, that is not an attractive person to watch eat. That's all food that just, dribbles out of your mouth if you aren't a perfect eater, which, unfortunately...
We have these production meetings on the road all the time at 9 o'clock, a breakfast production meeting. They'll be like... 5 of us there, the director, the graphics guy, the producer, me, Scal, lives doing the sideline. And after Scal has this monstrous order, he will wait till everybody's through, and then he kind of looks at you across the table and goes, are you finishing that?
then reaches
piece
over.
Piece and half of bacon on your plate disappears. Other piece of toast goes, and
he's
got a vacuum cleaner around the table.
Is he still, insane about the game of squash? Because he used to go, when he was on the road, he would look for, a pickup squash game, correct?
Yeah, no, that was that passed. That passed. That was a fad.
Yeah, he found a new personality. He's on to skateboarding now.
I don't know. He works out. How many times a day do you work out, Chet?
I work out once a day, Mike, probably for about an hour and a half to 2 hours on average.
Okay. Yeah, Scal does at least on the road twice, if not three times.
Wow.
But when we have our breakfast meeting at 9 o'clock, he's already worked out for an hour and a half. And then he'll work out again around the middle of the day, take a nap. And then it'll work out right before he leaves for the game.
He's a meathead like me, man. I love it.
He does not want to get old. He does not want to get old.
Gotta fight it, man.
Well,
he's doing everything he can to prevent it.
Last night was an interesting game just because I saw Sean Grandy. He had some stat last night, which I thought was pretty funny, was that ever since Gordon Hayward snapped his ankle at the beginning of last season, he's played more minutes in Cleveland than Kyrie Irving has. Do you find that interesting or strange? Or I don't. And matter of fact, I think the only game, John was telling me, the only game that he's played there since
was
he's been on the
team.
Was
the day that Gordon got hurt.
Yeah, it was the day Gordon Hayward snapped his ankle. Does that say anything to you?
That he doesn't want to play in Cleveland?
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't want to play in Cleveland. Yeah. Well, as we all know, he marches to the beat of his own drum, and he's got his own things that he will do and he won't do. And I guess playing in Cleveland is one of them. I did think we had passed a milestone last night. Ted, you mentioned you thought it might have come earlier in the Cleveland game previously, but there was a play in the first quarter where Hayward drove the baseline and dunked it on the same – it wasn't an alley-oop, it was off the dribble, but it was the same basket, and Scal and I both looked at it and said it was like deja vu as he ran up the court. It was like, oh, it wasn't so much a smile on his face. It was a look like, okay, that's behind me. And that could be a huge turning point for the Celtics heading into the playoffs because I think we've talked about this before, Rich. They need him to be the second guy.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, we were saying this morning, it's starting to look like he's going to be a guy that is going to win him a game in the playoffs if he continues to play this well coming off the bench.
Yeah, and he will be – they'll run the whole offense through him, and they're a better team when they do that. But when they have he and Horford out there, they have two guys who are basically looking to make everybody else better. And usually that's the role one guy has on the team. But when they have both of those guys out there, they have two. And Jaylen Brown, for one, has capitalized a lot on that of late.
There was an interesting move that Brad Stevens made, and that was putting in – Aaron Baines and Al Horford to start the game. And what did you make of that? And is that something that you think he, after what you saw last night, that he might consider rolling with in the playoffs? Or is this just, let's see how it works? Or maybe it's, I'm sending someone a message.
Well, I don't think he's sending so much a message as he is fiddling with lineups that he can potentially use. He's wanted to do this for a long time, this being fiddle with different combinations on the floor, but injuries keep preventing him from doing it. So now he's got the people in place he feels that he can take some chances with. So, yeah, I think he'll see him experiment with lineups and then put them in the back of his head for certain spots that occur during playoff games.
All right, Mike, obviously they're going to play Indiana in the first round of the playoffs. The question is who has home court advantage, but considering how wildly inconsistent the Celtics have been both at home and on the road at times this year, does it really matter if they finish 4 or 5?
Well, I think it does, John, because I think it's very difficult to project the Celtics deep into the playoffs if they never have the home court advantage. If they have the home court advantage against the Pacers, for instance, they get a pretty good chance with everybody healthy to finish the Pacers off in 5 games. If they have to start in Indiana, that might turn into a 6 or 7 game series. And Milwaukee's not going to have any problems with Miami or Orlando, whoever ends up in that number 8 spot. So they're probably going to take whoever the opposition out in 5 games. And you don't want to be playing a game 5, 6, and/or 7 while Milwaukee's just fiddling their thumbs waiting to play you. So I do think it's important that they get the home court for the first round just so they can hopefully take the Pacers out early as opposed to have that be something that extends them to 6 or 7 games. And then you right away have to go to Milwaukee to open a series against the rest of Milwaukee team.
This is going to sound like a broken record. But, I mean, we've been trying to figure this team out all season long.
So is Brad.
And I know. And here we are with, 7 games left in the season?
Yeah.
We don't know what they are. But you're sitting there every single game, watching every single play. Do you have, what kind of faith do you have that what Kyrie Irving says and that they'll get it together in the postseason, what kind of faith do you have that the team that we've been watching for the last several months will be able to pull that off?
I don't believe in the flip the switch theory. I think if you're a veteran, and Ted, I'd be curious in how this would apply or doesn't apply to football. If you're a veteran of 7, 8, 9 years and you've been through the playoffs 3 or 4 times, you may be able to flip the switch. But if you're in your first or second year or third year and it's the first time you go around in the playoffs, you don't know where the switch is. You don't understand the difference between regular season and playoff action. And until you've done it 3 or 4 times, you can't really differentiate between the two, whether I have to do this when the switch is off, and I have to do this when the switch is on. So I think the Celtics will continue to be inconsistent throughout the playoffs. I don't think we're going to see them suddenly get their act together. Whether or not they're good enough at being inconsistent to advance deep into the playoffs, I don't know. I think they can get through the first round, but I think Toronto and or Milwaukee will be a major, major obstacle.
Yeah, it's because I've been able to, for at least until about a month ago, I was able to kind of hang my hat on the 2010 Celtics, right? They were the ones who in the last month just looked horrendous.
Finished fourth in the East that year, if I remember.
They were getting their asses kicked by just bad, bad teams and just looked lifeless. Yep. And then, you know, we very, very famously, Scal was on our show beforehand and goes, trust me, this team is built for the playoffs. We're going to be fine. And of course, they make it to game seven of the finals. They end up losing, but they, you know, end up doing about as good as you could do without winning the whole thing. And then with this team, at least with that 2010 team at the beginning of the season, they were murdering people. Like, I mean, they looked like the team that you thought they were going to be. And then this one, you just never got a taste of it. And they're going to end up winning less games than they did the past two seasons. And I don't know. I don't even know what I'm asking. I just know that I'm confused. You know,
I think from where I sit, the biggest difference between the 2010 team and now is in 2010, they had a very defined leader in Kevin Garnett. He was the leader from day one until the last game of the season. This Celtic team has not really come up with a leader. Al Horford does the job as a leader, tries to do the job as a leader, but I don't think he's a leader in the same way Kevin Garnett was. So that's what is missing. I think long-term, and I get some raised eyebrows from some of the people in the Celtic organization when I say this, but I think long-term, this is Marcus Smart's team, and Marcus Smart will ultimately be the long-term leader of this team.
See, do you think this team doesn't have a leader or it doesn't have a good leader? Because I think that Kyrie Irving, how he goes, the team goes. And Rozier even admitted that. You know, the attitude of Kyrie is the attitude of the team.
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah. So it almost seems like they have elected a guy to be their leader, but it's just not working. And once again,
Kyrie is very much the leader on the court. During the course of the game, Kyrie is very much the leader of this team. After the game, I don't know who the leader of this team is. Al Horford, again, has stepped up to take that role over the course of the season. But, I think you need a more dynamic personality than Al. That's not meant to any kind of a knock on Al at all. Al's a really solid guy on and off the court and is a much better player than people give him credit for. But your team captain's got to be Garnett-like. He's got to be like a fiery guy, a guy who's running around and yelling at people. That's why I think Marcus Smart fits the role maybe best of the crop of people they have right now.
Oh, yeah, I wish it was Marcus, and I wish he was the guy, because even though he does some dumb things, like he did the other night pushing
Jordan. Incredibly dumb.
Like, so dumb, which, by the way, gave birth to one of the – did you see the photo that came out of that? I'll tweet it to you in just a second. It's Marcus Smart, and it's Joel Embiid with his arms up in the air, and he's like, But Marcus Smart, you know, when you watched it on TV, you thought he was like angry. Marcus Smart's more like he's got this face like, all right, shut up, and he's giving like one of those kind of faces instead, and it's brilliant. But even though he does dumb stuff, you never doubt that guy's heart, and you never doubt how much he wants to win. He might try to fire three balls back into winning, and he might make dumb decisions to try to win, but at least he's the guy that you never have to question his heart.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. If we had 12 Marcus Smarts,
wouldn't hit any threes, but we'd win games 85-82.
He's a better three-point shooter than people want to give him credit. Danny Ainge on the all-time list.
He did, and you're right. If you look at the season average, like, he's going to be probably right there in the middle when it finishes off. It's just when he misses, it's just so amazingly bad a shot that it sticks with you.
I love when he starts getting that groove, and all of a sudden he's shooting it just across the half-court line. It's easy, Marcus.
Steph Curry.
Tons of heat checks going on.
So this is going to be an interesting game on Friday, or it's Friday, right?
Indiana.
It's extremely important for the Celtics. They can't lose this game on Friday and expect to get the home court. They've got to win this game, and they're probably going to have to go into Indy and win that game too. Right. But you got to start with one, and this is Friday night. This is as big a game as they've had all season long.
All right, last question, Mike. You've been around this game a long time. Thumbs up or thumbs down on the Cavaliers uniforms last night?
Oh, thumbs down. That was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Couldn't agree with you more.
That was just awful. But I think they just create those things so they can put something else up in their little shop to sell.
But who's buying it? But, who's buying it?
Honest to gosh.
People in Cleveland do funny things.
Yes, they do. All right. Well, Mike, thanks for coming on with us. We'll talk to you again next week. And we got to have you in studio.
All right, guys.
When the playoffs start, would you want to, once again, it's a tradition now, come in studio for like an hour or 2 hours?
Yeah, I would love to.
That'd be awesome. All right. We will definitely have to make that happen in a couple weeks once the playoffs start. All right. Good talking to you, Mike.
See you,
Mike. All right. Thanks, man. All right. 617-779-0985. Here's John Walk with the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Listen, watch, react in real time. Toucher and Rich are on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub.
I'm going to give you an engine, low to the ground, extra big oil pan that'll cut the wind from underneath you. That'll give you 30 to 40 more horsepower. I'm going to give you a fuel line that will hold an extra gallon of gas. I'm going to shave half an inch off you and shape you like a bullet. Get your prime painted and weighed, you're gonna be ready to go out on that racetrack. You hear me? You're gonna be perfect.
We're gonna run through a wall.
I'm gonna shave you like a bullet.
John C. Reilly in that movie, by the way.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
There might.
That's right. He is. He's a in the pit.
There might not be any actor other than Robert Duvall that could have pulled that off without just people laughing.
Yeah.
Dude, you're talking to a car about how you're going to make it fast. You know what it would be? It would be one of those dumb scenes from the Fast and the Furious that Vin Diesel delivers.
Dumb scenes in Fast and the Furious.
There's a million dumb scenes.
No, there
that's what
aren't.
Makes it great.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Fast and Furious is a franchise that somehow turned into a movie that was the very first one. The dialogue, everything about it was a joke, which made it highly entertaining. There's literally a line in the movie where he goes, "You're going to have any beer you want as long as it's a Corona." They were completely unashamed of that it was just one giant ad.
Right.
However, the race scenes were unbelievable. The action scenes were great. And that's what they have become. They have become super dumb dialogue, which makes it fantastic, and unbelievably imaginative action scenes. The last one wasn't that good. I didn't like the one with Charlize Theron.
That was not good.
Kinda, but Hobbs and Shaw, in.
That's this summer, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'll watch it.
Because you took the two best parts of the Fast and Furious franchise, and you made a movie with them.
Yes.
The Rock, as soon as The Rock showed up to the Fast and Furious.
That was the fifth one,
next,
right?
No, fourth one. No, hang on.
That was the fifth one.
No, because the third one was the... Okay,
first, that was Tokyo Drift first was one the
is,
third one.
First one's Fast and Furious. Second one is Too Fast, Too
right.
Furious.
Third one was Tokyo Drift.
Third one was Tokyo Drift with the kid from Sling Blade.
Yes.
And then the
Lucas
fourth one.
Yeah.
That's right. Then the fourth one is when The Rock showed up. I believe the fourth one is the one where... Is that the one where they go underground in Mexico?
No, that's the one where they drive underneath the mountain into Mexico. Terrible scene there.
Are you kidding me? It's one of the best race scenes in the whole franchise.
No, that's awful.
They go through the drug smuggling tunnels underneath the border?
No, it was awesome. I disagree. The fifth one is when The Rock shows up and hunts them down in Central America. That's Fast Five. That's when The Rock shows up.
Too Fast, Too Jamelli. That's when The Rock shows up. That's when Nick got his motorcycle.
Nick's lightning quick. We've already determined that today.
What you got? What? It is the fifth one The Rock shows up.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, because I remember the fourth one being really good even without The Rock, I guess. Was that the drug smuggling one?
The fourth one is when Paul Walker and Vin Diesel gets back involved with the franchise.
Okay, and the fifth
second one... Second one he was gone. The third one he showed up only in the last scene. Fourth one is when Vin Diesel gets back involved.
The fifth one is the one where they attach the safe to the back
of the
two cars.
Yes, that's the end.
Oh,
yes.
It was awesome.
That's the best one.
That might be the best one.
Yeah.
That's the one we're even faster and we're more furious?
No, it's called Fast Five.
Fast Five. It is Fast last five might be the best of them all. And then the sixth
one. Don't mess
one,
with me on these.
I know you know these very well.
I'm impressed, John.
The sixth one, is that the one where Kurt Russell shows up?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr.
And,
Nobody.
And
yes.
Statham made
shows
an appearance
up.
In, yes. in that one or the yes. fifth, at the end of the fifth one.
Hold on now.
Because he kills Han at the end
yeah,
of the fifth one,
at the
one,
end
right?
of the fifth one, he kills
oh,
Han.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
Right. Statham shows up, and it's like after the credits
yeah.
have rolled,
right.
Statham goes up and shoots Han. You're like, whoa, you saved that for after the credits? Are you
yep.
effing crazy?
That's right.
It's a major plot line.
Yep.
Han was boring anyway. He wasn't a good character.
Yeah.
And they killed him off. And then Statham became, you know, all of a sudden buddies with the guy who killed Vin Diesel's best, which makes no sense.
Let's say he was the older brother of the guy that Vin Diesel has to beat.
And now Hobbs and Shaw got to work together.
That's right.
Mm-mm, that ain't going to work. That's not going to work.
Kurt Russell has to show up in this too, right?
Make sure
they work together.
Kurt Russell's one of those guys who just makes any movie he's in better.
Oh, I love Kurt Russell. Oh,
yeah. Everything. The Big best. Trouble in Little China. Classic.
Yeah. Highly underrated.
Oh, dude. It's
highly underrated.
That movie's unbelievable.
It is very good.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real line in a movie.
You can have any brew you want. As long as it's a Corona.
I mean, and the fact that Vin Diesel, the music too,
is worth listening to.
The fact that Vin Diesel thinks he's the reason that franchise is doing well, dude, come on. First of all, it's the action scenes. Vin Diesel is so dumb that it's great. But The Rock took it to the next level. Come on, let's not be stupid here. All right, Yeah, The Rock shows up with the fifth one. Yes, thank you very much. I have a lot of people very angry at me. Did you see? You're not a fan of the Fast and Furious?
I'm not.
Did you see him or just haven't seen him?
You know what? I can't watch 90 minutes of car chases
because Why? You get angry and want to beat up the people who cut.
Yeah, did one of these people cut you off?
No. I like dialogue. I like more a script that has
dialogue.
A little bit more depth.
There's plenty of dialogue.
Dude,
okay.
There's right. dialogue. That's one thing about a street fight. The street always wins.
That's right.
I don't know what I'm missing out
there. You brought a gun to a street fight? You're damn right I did.
Come on, man. You got to watch.
Dad just said it. Give me a little Shawshank. Give me some deep character development.
You just talked about what you like Days of Thunder.
Okay. I'll make exceptions, all right?
Days of Thunder
But Cole Trickle, he's battling things that I've maybe battled,
Okay.
It's like he's got to overcome the obstacles in his way. He was counted out, right?
Yeah, he was counted out.
And look what he did. He started out, on the dirt track, and now he got his chance to be one of the big boy NASCAR guys. I can relate to that.
You can relate.
I can't relate to Fast and Furious. I can't relate to that at all.
I don't know. Listen, if you talk about what's his name? Fratello or what is Vin Diesel's character's name? Toretto?
Dominic Toretto.
Yeah. Listen, if you roll with Dom, man, he's a guy who was always the king of the streets, all right? But then the big boys tried to pick him up, and he had to start working for the government, and he had to learn how to work with people he didn't want to, much like when you are a part of a football team, correct?
Okay.
Different personalities?
You're selling it good. Okay.
Uh-huh. That's good. That's an avenue I wouldn't have tried. That's pretty good.
All right.
Pretty good right there.
And you all have one common goal, and that is to kick maximum ass in cool cars.
All right. You know what? I'm going to change my attitude towards the Fast and Furious. I'm going to watch one, and then I'll report back to you.
All right. I'm going to make you a list of movies, and I want you to either tell me if you haven't seen it, and if you have not seen them, I'm going to make it mandatory that you have to see these
That's
films.
That's a deal.
All right?
Before the show's out today at 10 o'clock. Let's do that.
That we will definitely do. All right. 617-779-0985. We have to address something that Ted Johnson tweeted about yesterday. Finally get around to this. It regards something we were talking about on the show right about this time yesterday. We will get to that right after.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
No parents, no rules, no shirts, and best of all,
it's Toucher and Rich.
I read you loud and clear.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. 8:54, Ted Johnson here in studio, and about this time yesterday, I was talking about how I got a friend of mine who was talking to me about how he feels that he needs to give his son the talk. And the thing that stood out was that his son is in third grade. And he believes that the reason he has to tell him about the birds and the bees and have the old sit down that is awkward for anybody is because there apparently was a kid in his class who had an iPad with internet access and started pulling up all sorts of pictures. And his son started asking him questions. And he's like, this is way earlier than I thought it was going to be, but we're going to do it, which got me thinking, well, I'm going to have to have that talk pretty soon, too. And I can't think of anything more horribly awkward in a moment that's wildly uncomfortable. And if you've had the talk from your parent, we've lived through it. And at least mine went okay. We had people calling in yesterday telling me about the awkward call that they had or the awkward talk that they had with their parents. And now I feel actually like I'm going to do just peachy keen because one dad said he just sat his son down to watch the Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee video. And at the end of it was just like, what did he do wrong? No condoms. And that was the end of the talk.
That was it, huh? Lesson learned. No condoms.
Lesson learned. Yes.
We had one guy call in Ted yesterday and said he was driving with his grandmother. And the grandmother said, have you gotten a talk from your mom and dad? If your mom and dad said anything, and he said no. And the guy was like 17 when this happened. And he was driving in the car, and his grandmother, riding shotgun, had the talk with him. There was no escape. He was driving, and he still had about however long it was, another hour to go in the car. He was trapped and forced to listen to his grandmother tell him about the birds and the bees.
Oof.
Yeah. Man. That's bad.
That's very bad.
Yeah,
very uncomfortable from coming from grandma.
So you were saying that. And what's your dad's name again?
Yeah, Ted Senior.
Big Ted. So Big Ted Senior. You had that moment.
It wasn't really. This might come off as a popcorn fart, but it was basically in college. I remember I was going in to be a freshman at University of College. This is all my dad said. It was more not necessarily the talk because it was just advice. And all it was just don't get her pregnant. So that was the only thing. And I said, Dad, I've seen all the right moves. I know that. I know that. What that could do to derail your career. But that was basically it. So he never had to have that talk with me.
Okay.
But just the advice he gave me at that point was, thanks, Pop. That's good to know. Don't get her pregnant.
Yeah.
And that was like my absolute. If there was any the one fear that I had that consumed me. Absolutely consumed me in high school was that very thing.
Was getting someone pregnant?
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least you thought about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I was terrified of that.
Because that was the
I had big plans, and I just knew that was going to really screw my big plans up.
Because you know that, I mean, you were obviously somebody who, you know, as you were growing up, you played sports. You probably had, you know, a scenarios where you could have hooked up with like a fan club. You had a fan club, a Ted Johnson fan club, yep. I take it. All right. So
I was very careful, though.
It's tough.
I was very much a Boy Scout, and a lot of my really bad decision making happened after I left. I'd say most of it I was going to make up for lost time.
Sure.
I was going to enjoy being an NFL football player after I retired from the NFL kind of thing.
You were just like, hey, Daisy Buchanan's.
Yes.
Teddy James here.
Yeah. So, but before that, I was terrified. And so I probably, believe it or not, missed out on some really great opportunities because of that fear. The sense of just going down a road I didn't want to, you know, that every guy would maybe jump at because I was worried about just getting a girl pregnant.
Sure. And you probably knew people who had very promising careers who did that. And then all of a sudden they got a little soldier and, you know, everything kind of changes.
I mean, look, yeah. No, Chris Penn and all the right moves. Brian, the character, he got derailed. He got her pregnant and then he couldn't go play ball at USC, I don't think. So
that's correct.
Yeah.
It was USC.
It was USC. I just thought, man, I wanted to go to University of Colorado. I don't want to jeopardize that.
Maybe that's what happened to what's his name with the Chargers, with the quarterback Philip Rivers. Maybe Philip Rivers was just so restrained, and then all of a sudden, it's like, ah! Now he's got his ninth kid.
That's right. At least they're all from the same woman, right? I mean, it's so far.
Yes, that's true. That's Antonio. He didn't need Antonio Cromartie this.
Right. Right.
Antonio is in a class by himself.
I have more respect for the guy that has kids over and over again with the same woman.
Yeah,
right.
My mother was one of nine. And like so wow. Not only was my mother one of nine, but my two older brothers are what they call Irish twins, which means they were born within 12 months of each other. So they are 11 months apart.
I have kids that are just under 11 months apart.
You are a savage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, you got to wait.
Well, that 6-week period? Oh, yeah. I got to pass the goalie quick.
You got to wait for, like, nature to take its course, my man.
He's so proud of himself. Look at him. Yeah.
There's,
yeah, baby.
Charlie Johnson.
There's certain things that kind of got to, you know, go back to their normal state.
Yeah.
It was the look in his eye when he said it. That's the scary part of it.
It couldn't have been fun. I mean, it's got to be like punching smoke.
Hey, Billy Jaffe, how are you?
It wasn't that bad, buddy. Okay? It wasn't optimum, but it wasn't as bad as you're describing it either.
Okay. All right. Just sometimes, every once in a while, I would think about how my brothers were born like 11 months from each other. I just think of my dad's like, Dad, you're a savage. Just an absolute savage.
And someday, Ted, your kids will look at you that way also.
I hope so. That's right. Dad didn't wait for nobody, especially Mother Nature. All right. 617-779-795. We have, I don't even know how to transition this. Billy Jaffe, there's hockey and stuff. We're going to have to jump on.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello!
I'm overwhelmed. You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is Toucher and Rich, and man who sat.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello!
This is where Boston talks sports.
I'm overwhelmed. You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is Toucher and Rich, and man who sat down at the very end of that last break and was like, what the hell did I just walk into? Mr. Billy Jaffe of Nesson joins us.
Who doesn't love walking into talk like that?
But you immediately said, it was like, all right. So you how old were you when you got the talk? Like when there was an
attempted talk. We always talked about sex owner. Like, it was wide open in our, like, it was never a
taboo thing.
A bad thing, never, but we joked about it a lot, whatever. But the one incident was when I was 15. I was dating a girl, though, that was 2 years older than me.
I was dating
a senior in high school.
That's how you rolled.
When I was a sophomore.
Nice.
And so,
by the way, can I just quickly say,
that doesn't surprise me.
That's a rare thing. Like a lot of times the seniors would date like younger girls, like the senior guys would date like younger. That would happen all the time in high school. But if you were like a sophomore guy and you were dating a senior girl,
savage.
You were like
savage
star hockey player. Savage. Billy, who are you, star hockey player?
You're
on
like
the team
of
by
the
then
school.
Well, our school wasn't a big hockey school. It had a team in Chicago, but you had to play what is now called AAA. I was out of the school a lot. I would take 15-16 trips a year away, and when I could play for the high school hockey team, I would. It wasn't like it used to be. Well, it still is here, you know, it's big, but
my point is you were a hockey star at that point when you were 15.
I was playing all the time.
Yep.
I was playing all
the time. And the girls came running,
this,
didn't they?
But so anyway, I was dating this girl. And then so we're at my, we land in Detroit to go play a weekend of games there. And it's just my dad and I, and great relationship with him. Different than though than I had with my mom. And my dad says, we get into the rental car. We go, and he gives me the old, your mother wanted me to talk to you about something. I'm like, what? Where's this going? But she, they were worried. Not naive. They were, you know, older girl, sure. Everything. So it literally went 12 seconds. I'm like, okay.
That's how fast it was, yep, for me the first time.
I'm like, all right, no, just be smart. That's all I got. So I was like, okay, just be smart. Yeah, I was scared crapless about the, all the, you know, pregnancy thing. You know, I was, yeah, about that. And but I did some dumb things, but that's all right.
Well, so now, how old are your kids right now?
11 and turning 9.
So, I mean, is it, when do you think you're going to possibly approach the subject? Because, I mean, I'm right now, I'm on the doorstep right now.
Well, I think, I mean, everybody's different, but I think if you just make it a conversational thing, that it becomes okay. It becomes, you know, hey, we'll talk about certain things. Of course, you know, I could never talk about certain things with authority like my wife can.
Yeah, yeah.
With our daughter and vice versa.
Oh, see, having a daughter would be a nightmare for me. I would just turn that over to my wife. I'd be like, you're doing that.
Well, that's what I do, you know, too, you do that. But on the other, I also think that you have to show, I mean, this is great sports radio. I think you have to show that you're also, as a father, I think that you understand. I mean, that
you know, can come to you.
Don't turn a blind eye and say, oh, no, not my kid.
Sure, that they can come to and you and talk to you about anything.
That's my philosophy. So, yeah, no, I think if you just say, if it starts coming up and if you laugh about it a bit and you are honest about it, and whatever, that's my philosophy. Because if you think that you're hiding them from something that they're not going to get, then you're a fool. That's my take.
Well, listen, if you need any videos, we've been sent a few from listeners.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That apparently they were used to, not the Pam and Tommy one, but there's one that's called, like, What's Happening Down There? I think that's actually the name of it. And it's this really, like, creepy 70s depressoid cartoon that, like, is enough to give you nightmares. So if you like it, and if you get nervous.
Well, how old are your kids now?
I got 11, and he's the one that I'm starting. The 8-year-old, I can wait a little bit.
A little.
But I think, and I'm like you. I'm one of those people that if you just talk about it and it's not as something that is taboo or whatever, and it's open, you know. And
you hope.
You hope.
You hope, because you sure as heck don't know.
Yeah.
You think you know what your kids are doing, and the truth is, most of the time, you don't. As well as you think you're, you know, have the pulse of it,
yeah,
they're away from you an awful lot.
Of course. And now with the internet, and on top of that, too, I was the weird kid that when they offered human growth and development in sixth grade, there was me and honestly, one other kid. It was just me and one other boy out of the entire sixth grade. It's like 400 kids in my class who weren't allowed to go to human growth and development because my parents would not sign the permission slip. So I had to sit in a room with this other kid and read this book about, like, by a guy named James Dobson. And it's something about, like, called Focus on the Family or something weird like that.
Yeah.
And so all the kids would go in one room.
That's not uncomfortable.
Everybody,
not
let's
at
learn
all
about sex in this room. Yeah. Except, oh, I'm sorry, Rich Schertenlieb and Jeremy Conrad, you're in this room over here. Here's a really nerdy book that you got to read.
Still remember the kid's name?
Yes,
the other kid?
That was
Of course I do. It was emotionally scarring.
Have you thrown it on your parents? Have you gone back to them saying, did you really make me sit that out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I busted my parents' balls about that. And it's funny. It's like, not as much as the one thing I bust my mom's balls about, the one thing I bust my mom about the most is the fact that she let me see any movie I wanted to when I was a kid. Like, there was, like, zero any kind of looking into what might be in the film. I saw Poltergeist when I was 5.
Oh, wow.
5. Yeah. Now, I think it would have been better if I would have seen the most explicit X-rated movie than Poltergeist. Because what is Poltergeist? It's a movie where all of the things that kids love turn against them and try to murder them. It is their toys in their room try to strangle them to death. It's the tree outside their window tries to reach in and swallow them. It's in the closet, there's a giant head monster that tries to pull you and swallow you whole. And on your TV, your favorite thing when you're a kid, it sucks you in and takes you to some weird nether region. Like, I mean, that was a movie, and I remember I talked about it one time on the air. My mother emailed me with this big, long email. Poltergeist, I thought it was about a kindly ghost like Casper. I'm like, well, you obviously
Poltergeist
didn't see-
for you was when I had older stepbrothers, and so at a young age, I saw inappropriate movies. I saw The Jerk. Bo Derek in 10.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Porky.
Oh, yeah. Nothing inappropriate.
just there's on and on and on of these inappropriate movies because I had older stepbrothers that my parents never knew about because I was just introduced to these movies because of those guys.
You tagged along.
Yeah,
you were there.
I was. Oh, yeah. I was there.
If you had older siblings or you had one of those old school cable boxes where all you had to do was stick a penny inside the side of it and you could get any channel you wanted, oh, dude, you knew. I was watching Cinemax.
Yeah.
When I was 7?
Skinamax.
Yeah, and Skinamax is always... I mean, Hot Dog the Movie was on constant rotation.
Great movie. Great movie, man.
Yes, indeed.
Love that movie.
Pretty
like
decent
you better
soundtrack.
All the time.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this game the other night...
Oh, a good transition.
Okay. I really have no idea.
No easy way.
I'm awful at these things. But it was a...
Great game.
It was a great game.
Disappointing result.
The third period was a defensive breakdown.
Yep.
And I know that we talked about Charlie McAvoy. I think he was on ice for all three of those goals.
Yes.
Including the one that really was the turning point of the game. What do you make of this matchup against the Lightning? Because the Lightning are historically good. But the Bruins have shown they can hang with them.
So there was a lot of talk about, and you know, just stop me if you guys already did this. There's a lot of talk a couple of weeks ago when the Bruins thoroughly outplayed Tampa at TD Garden. That wasn't Tampa's number one goalie. Domingue's pretty good backup, one of the best in the league right now. But and they were three games in four nights, pretty healthy though too. They had all their team, but three games in four nights. So that's not the real Tampa team. I don't disagree, actually. Meaning that was a different situation. They weren't fresh. They probably weren't as intense as the Bruins were.
Bees didn't have Pastrnak.
Bruins didn't have Pastrnak. They go into Tampa. They're missing four, then five, as John Moore gets hurt later in the first period, regular players. They're on the road for 8 days. Yes, it's not a back-to-back, but they're on the road. They're tired. Last game of the road trip, et cetera. No excuse. I'm not making any. So there's no BS here, all right?
Yeah.
Point is, the Bruins found another gear in that second period, actually late first and into the second, where they're like, all right, you know what? We can hang with these guys in their barn. We're better than them. Let's show it. Did the Bruins get ahead of themselves? Probably a little. Come third period, did they make some mental mistakes? No, probably. Absolutely, they did. You know, they started to do things that were not what they were doing to get to that point. Does that mean that they still that I'm saying that they're better than Tampa? No. Do I think they can play with Tampa? Yes. Do I think they're going to have to be if they get past Toronto in the first round? Big if. If they get past and they go play Tampa, are they going to have to play close to, you know, perfect hockey for a 7-game series? Well,
yes.
Yeah, they're going to have to. But with all that said, I don't know if I've seen many other teams that will do that to Tampa. Maybe Washington, if Washington gets fully healthy, although they just lost a defenseman the other day on their D-line. But I think the Bruins have that chance. With all said and done, you know, you can't bury your head in the sand and say, well, it's just they screwed up in the third period.
Yeah.
But the thing that we kept hearing from the other night, relatively, or all the time, was we learned we have to use this learning experience. We have to move from this, but we have to understand what we did. I think they got ahead of themselves a little, and that's okay.
You also, it's not just the game they just played, Billy. It's the first time they met in Tampa. It was a 1-1 game in the third period, and then Tampa systematically tore them apart over the first 5 minutes and went ahead and won the game. The fact that the Bruins dismantled them at TD Garden and were with them each of the two times they played there gives me a lot of confidence that they can stay with this team in a second round playoff series if everyone is healthy. If they get Krug back, if they get Grizzlick back, those are a lot of ifs.
Yeah, but
from what we've been led to believe, those guys are going to be available come playoff time.
Exactly. So when we're playing that if, you know, and or but type game, and that's a wonderful game to play on sports radio. The reality happens when it's on the field, on the ice, whatever. So the Bruins when the Bruins decide to initiate the physical contact and not receive the physical play from Tampa, the games are Jekyll and Hyde, night and day, whatever bad, you know, analogy or saying you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally different. When the Bruins decide, I like to call it play on your toes hockey versus wait and react hockey. If you wait and react to the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're screwed. They moved the puck 5 or 6 times in 10 seconds on that one goal off the faceoff. And the Bruins were like, right? They were And, you know, Bruce Cassidy even talked about it. I'm paraphrasing here. You know, he puts it on the coaches because, you know, they need to prepare them for those face-off plays out of video and stuff. And you know what? I mean, look, I appreciate Bruce saying that. I'm sure the players do too. You still have to pick up your man. Again, easier said than done. Let's also, the funny thing is, whenever our team, whatever your team is, whether it's the Pats, the Celts, whatever, the Bruins, whenever they're a little bit bad or a little bit off, everybody's like, oh, they suck. Oh, they can't. You know, I mean, it's like that defense mechanism. If you keep saying it, it's eventually going to happen, right? You know what I mean? Eventually, just understand the other team can be damn good too. And they're great. They're the best team in the league. No question, Tampa. When they move the puck like that, if you wait to react, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
a
mess.
You have to play almost near perfect hockey.
You've got it, but you've got to be on your toes. You've got to know your assignments, and you've got to, and does that mean you're going to execute it perfectly all the time? No, but you have a better chance when you do. But if you let them initiate on the forecheck, you're a mess. Like Kucherov was non-existent in that game until he had room. Kucherov was non-existent. And he's temperamental. He's phenomenal. What a shot. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that can
load
up.
He's also the MVP of the league this year.
He's phenomenal when he has room. But when he's not getting room and he becomes petulant, he doesn't participate as much.
The young defenseman?
Clifton.
Is he impressing you?
Yeah.
I mean he's talking about a physical aspect.
Yeah.
I mean, he was laying dudes out in that game.
You know what he is? He's that guy. We'll go back to our previous conversation that we started with, the sex talk. He's the guy that goes out to the bar that isn't the biggest, strongest, this, that, and everything. But all of a sudden, he's like, yeah, and the ladies are around.
Sorry. Rejects that confidence.
Yeah, he's got that confidence.
Hide that in. I'm so impressed with you right now.
I really am.
Isn't that called the big blank energy? Isn't that what it's called?
Yes, that's exactly what that's called.
He had it at Quinnipiac. I did a few of his games when he was at Quinnipiac. He had this almost Wild West to his game.
Sure.
And now,
Wild West.
Yeah. He's just like, he's got this swagger.
Awesome.
He's
great.
Got the big blank energy.
So yes. He does. Him and Marchand will get along.
Oh, no, are you kidding me? You know, and his interviews, by the way, are great, too. But is he ready for primetime regularly? I mean,
if everyone's healthy, does he dress?
I don't think so yet.
Yeah.
But you know what he's done? In a matter of one season with two call-ups, he has shown Bruins management, coaches, teammates, that he is a legit call-up. He's a legit prospect and a guy that can earn a spot on this team. And he brings some different things that they need that every team likes. It's that one guy that you keep saying, how did he make it undrafted? How did he do it?
And that's how.
He does it with that big game swagger.
All right, playoffs right around the corner. If you have a question for Billy Jaffe, 617-779-0985. We will continue just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.